Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. You got it? Oh, he got it. This right here, this is our NBA guy, Nick Wright.
Good morning, everybody.
What's up?
Nothing. I just, Chris does something every morning that makes me laugh. It's the old, the gods flip a coin and we see how it comes up. A little inside joke from Chris, and I'll tell you off the air in about 12 minutes after we talk about
game. How awkward is it that I'm right
finals.
Here and I'm on the outside?
I have to say
hi to a friend of the show.
I was on a train, Metro North, yesterday, going up to Greenwich. Guy watches the show every day in Israel.
Up and down.
Huge fan of Jenna. Nick, man, oh, man, he likes the new hair and everything, too.
Okay,
so
like
shout
that.
Out to all our fans out there. We typically don't
well,
do it, but hey.
Shout out to
the guy who said something to me on the street of Harlem yesterday as I'm walking by. Nothing else other than, hey, how long you had that toupee? I can thank you for that. Being a
it's
part
working.
Of my life.
Thank
now.
You, America.
Absolutely. Go ahead, General Wolf.
With that, we are going to start the aforementioned show. Big one today. Baker Mayfield and OBJ gave us a preview of what we can expect in Cleveland. The Los Angeles Lakers could be back in the mix for Anthony Davis. Okay. But only one place to start this show, and that's with the NBA Finals, which resume tonight. Raptors, Warriors, all tied up at a game apiece. For Golden State, a team that's become basically a walking MASH unit of late, they'll be without Kevin Durant once again, despite wanting to play and ramping up his workouts. KD will not be ready in time for tonight's game, still out with that strained calf. As for Klay Thompson and that strained hamstring, he will be a game-time decision. Here's more now from Klay Thompson.
Obviously, I'll do anything I can to be out there, but it's all in their hands, and if there's any pain, it'll be a no-go just because of the position we're in. You know, this could be a longer series, so there's no point in trying to go out there and re-aggravate it and potentially keep myself out of the whole entire finals instead of just one game.
Our team is very adaptable. We've got a lot of versatility, and what it requires is bench players being ready to step up like they always are. And guys just playing hard and playing together.
Nick, it doesn't look good for the Warriors at this point. If Klay is a game-time decision, KD is definitely out. You have no Kevon Looney at this point. How can the Warriors overcome their injuries tonight?
Well, if Klay doesn't go, it would take a Herculean Steph Curry, Draymond Green performance. Mm-hmm. It would be, if Klay does not play, given the fact that KD's out and as a secondary storyline, Kevon Looney's out, it would be, to me, one of the greatest wins in this five-year run for this franchise. If they can win this game with no Klay and no Durant against a defense that good, and I've been pretty adamant that I think Klay's going to find a way to play, and that if he doesn't, I don't see their path to victory. But Klay's comments there alarmed me. If you think he's going to play. I asked you this morning, is there anything you can do for a hamstring as far as to address the pain? We know with a sprained ankle, they can do some cortisone or some type of medication mm-hmm. to where you can numb it to a degree. And you said they would never do that for a strained hamstring because you then risk tearing it. You then risk further injury. And for Klay to say, if there's pain, it's a no-go. Not if there's pain, I'll see if I can gut through it. Not if there's pain, I'll see how I feel in warm-ups. That, to me, is probably the reason why all of a sudden last night the Warriors went from 5.5-point favorites in Vegas to down to 4-point favorites and now back up to 4.5. Like, Vegas heard that KD was out, but they expected KD to be out, then heard what Klay had to say, and that drastically hurts the Warriors' chances if he's feeling tenderness or pain that he thinks he won't be able to go.
Because, see, with the hamstring, you could probably do more damage to it if you try to fight through that pain as opposed to the ankle. Am I right?
Yeah, and a lot of people are looking at Game 3. Klay started looking at beyond in the series. But one thing, Jenna, that you thought was important was, man, you get an injury like this, they're going to play 3 games in 5 days. Now, they've had 3 days off and everything. They're going to play tonight. But the actuality is they got 3 games in 5 days and the ability to be able to play without pain. I think he's not going to be able to do that. So I don't think he's going to be able to play tonight. It does put a lot of pressure on the Warriors for game number 4. But if you look at what's the best for the Warriors, this is a series. This is not the Super Bowl. This is not NFC, AFC championship game where you're going to have 2 weeks off. No, you're still in a series that is tied up. There is no cushion. There is no room for a team to be reckless at this point in the series.
Just so people understand the schedule, they play tonight, off tomorrow, and then play Friday. That's the only stretch in the series where they only have one day off. Then they'll be off the whole weekend and play back in Toronto for game five on Monday. So between now and Monday, those are those three games Chris is talking about. I look at that, though, almost from a slightly different perspective in this regard. Kevin Durant, I don't think you can circle game four for him anymore.
Nope.
See, he hasn't practiced yet. They're going to practice tomorrow. That's going to be a light practice. When they play today, they play Friday, mm-hmm. It's going to be a light practice. Kerr had already said, I guess it's feasible that KD could play after just one practice. So game five to me is now the earliest you could see Kevin Durant. So there's one way to say, yeah, it's going to be a long series. Another way to look at it is it could be a short series if the Warriors don't win tonight. So the idea of we want to save Klay, we want to be cautious with Klay. If you don't think you're going to have Kevin Durant for game four, and you know you're not going to have Looney, and we don't know how Boogie's going to respond to the increased workload he's going to need tonight with Looney out, you lose tonight, all of a sudden you are facing, in my mind, a must-win game in game four, even though we've seen the Warriors once come back from 3-1 down in the conference finals. That's a position only 11 teams in NBA history have come back down 3-1 in any series. Tonight's game does become a critical game, and for them to win without Klay Thompson, if they have to do that, I mentioned Steph and Draymond. Boogie also will have to not only duplicate what he did in game two, but do it on an even higher level.
But let's be realistic. They're going to have to find points. Klay mm-hmm. and Durant have combined to average 50 points this postseason. Where are you going to find that production from if Steph doesn't have a monster night, which he hasn't had yet so far this series?
Quinn Cook's got to be able to score in double figures. He's a great shooter of the basketball. He's their best shooter coming off the bench. But you're awful small, and you're giving up a lot on the defensive end. So that offensive output that we're missing from Klay, Draymond's going to have to take over a little more, just like he did when KD went out. Iggy, I know Iggy is going to do what he's got to do on the defensive end, but he's got to be able to score in double figures. They have to be at four players to be able to score in double figures. Who's going to be those guys? That's what's going to play out. They get four guys in double figures, they can pull off the tremendous win at home tonight.
If Klay doesn't play, then all of a sudden Boogie and his minutes will feel much more at home in this regard. They will run post-ups for Boogie Cousins, something that he has mm-hmm. always loved. He wanted that in Sacramento, and he got it. He wanted it in New Orleans. He got it to a degree. With Golden State, he knew he wasn't going to get as much of it. But that is, compared to a regular Warriors offense, that's an inefficient possession. Compared to a Quinn Cook, Alphonso McKinney, Andre Iguodala Warriors offense, that would be a good possession. Boogie will get a lot of touches if Klay can't go.
Look for Toronto also. If Quinn Cook and Steph play a lot of minutes together, it's not something they did a lot during the regular season. Look for Toronto to try to get back out on the fast break, which they were able to do in game number one, because defensively, you have guards displaced. Steph, if he's trying to be off the ball in that box and one defense they're playing, yeah. Who's going to be back on defense all the time? Quinn Cook is not used to that responsibility and being disciplined at it, so I look for Nick Nurse and that coaching staff. Let's get back to game number one. Let's speed up this pace. Try to get some good looks early in the shot clock compared to what we did in game number two.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
To the NFL now.
What?
After skipping most of the Browns' voluntary OTA workouts the last 2 weeks, to the disappointment of new head coach Freddie Kitchens, Odell Beckham Jr. showed up to their three-day mandatory minicamp yesterday, catching passes, doing wide receiver type things. Baker Mayfield was certainly happy to finally see him at camp, said the duo will kick into overdrive soon. See, what is the ceiling for this combo for Baker and OBJ this season?
Well, this is the thing that I think that people who don't really know the Browns are just a team on a sheet of paper, and they just think it's OBJ. They just think Baker Mayfield because they get a lot of attention. But they really have some quality players. First, it starts with their offensive line. Last year, one of the first things Freddie Kitchens did when he took over as the offensive coordinator, they started running the football. And their offensive line started knocking some people back. And one of the reasons why Baker was so successful was not that he's just such a great thrower of the football at such a young age, but they gave him protection. He wasn't getting hit. You guys been doing this show long enough to know these young kids, they have to adapt to the physicality of the league, and it prevents a lot of them from being successful. Baker has all the tools, but they started being physical, and they have Njoku, the tight end, Jarvis Landry. I believe, especially, he's the perfect fit. He's like Clay and Steph. He is not always going to be a deep threat. Odell Beckham is more of the deep threat. But them matched together makes them a rare, rare group as far as pass catchers. They have two quality running backs. Nick Chubb, second year out of University of Georgia, is a pure runner of the football. And I believe maybe the acquisition of the offseason in Kareem Hunt, getting him for half the season. Man, they're explosive. So when I talk about OBJ, if I talk about Baker Mayfield, I have to do it in the totality of everything else they have around it. This is the most talented team that OBJ's been on. It's the most talented quarterback that he's ever caught passes from. So I'm not expecting just from the numbers, but I'm expecting where his body is. There's a reason why he wasn't at the OTAs. He wanted to work on some things. You have to remember, he's gotten hurt the last 2 years. He wanted to work on some things as far as his body before he started getting on the field and have full physical contact as far as developing as a football player. So that's why he took this first year. He would have done that with the Giants, because at this point in his career, he believes it's really important for his foundation. And he doesn't want to get hurt like he has, which has ended his last couple seasons. So I look for high expectations. It's not in 1,400 yards. It's not in 15 touchdowns. He's going to have double digits in touchdowns. He's going to have at least 1,200 yards. But as an offense, they're going to be one of the better offenses that we have in the NFL, and Baker and OBJ will be a huge part of that.
And because of the things you mentioned, that they have a legitimate offensive line, which for a long time, there was a time when the Browns, the only good thing they had was their offensive line. And then when they started getting some talented players, the offensive line, aside from Joe Thomas, was holding them back. Now they have a legitimate offensive line. You mentioned the running core, the two running backs that they will have by the end of the season. And Njoku at tight end, Jarvis Landry. Because you cannot just key on Odell Beckham, and because Baker showed us in the second half of last season that he is already ready to be, at the very least, an above-average NFL quarterback, what do I think the ceiling is for him? I think the ceiling for this duo is to be the most effective and productive quarterback-wide receiver combo in football. It's hard to be that if that's the only thing the opposition has to worry about. It's hard to be that if the quarterback is constantly under duress. But you mentioned Baker's the most talented quarterback Odell's ever played with. Odell's played in 59 career games. In NFL history, no one has more catches. He's second most in yards through that time, and he's third most touchdowns. Now, I know the numbers are all inflated in this era, but still, he's done that with, in my mind, below average quarterback play every step of his career. Mm-hmm. And so what could you don't want?
And a limited running game.
A limited running game and a limited offensive line. He's done it in the hardest circumstances, where every game, how did you stop the Giants' offense? Contain the kid with the yellow hair, and the offense goes to die. Now if a team says, we're going to double Odell everywhere he goes, we're not going to let him beat us, well, Jarvis Landry makes $16 million a year for a reason. They drafted Nick Chubb at the top of the second round for a reason. They have other ways to beat you. I think that will play directly into Odell's hands, and I think it also will, he will have more fun playing football this year than he's had since LSU. Now, LSU, they didn't have great quarterback play, but he did have Jarvis. They had talented wide receivers. He went out there with a fully loaded gun, so to speak. He hasn't been able to do that with the Giants. I think that will pay enormous dividends for Odell and for the Browns offense this season.
How long will it take for Baker and Odell to get their timing right, to get on the right page, on the same page? Freddie Kitchens has been very vocal about trying to get this offense to these players as quickly as possible. It's why he made a couple of comments about wishing that Odell was at the involuntary, OTAs a little earlier. But now that he's there, how long before you actually see these guys get their chemistry going?
You hear a lot of NFL players talk about the season being a marathon, the overall endurance, but it's really like running a mile. And if you run a mile on a track that's 400 meters, it's four laps. And the offseason pretty much goes like this. You can do whatever you want them first three laps. But when they hit that bell lap, that's that last lap. And that's what the OTAs and June mini camp is. It's the organization, the coaching staff telling you, this is the last lap before you get ready for the season. You need to get your stuff in order. So now they need to be able to spend quality time together in the next 2 months trying to work out what Julio Jones and Matt Ryan do every offseason. You won't hear about it. They just get together. He calls Julio up. Man, let's go down to a local high school and let's play catch. The greatest combinations that we've ever seen. They spend time together on and off the field, and that's what Freddie Kitchens is talking about. And for those, Jenna, Freddie Kitchens, those who are worried, you should be worried. Passing the football, it's an art form, but it takes time, and you can't just grant yourself, oh, we're going to pass all these steps. They have to be able to spend time together on the football field. In the next 2 months, it becomes very, very important. January, you can do whatever you want. February, do whatever you want. March, you can start training. When it's come June, it's time for football players to start training, doing football things. That's quarterbacks and wide receivers getting together so we can work out those little things that when you get 60,000 people in a stadium and people are yelling and throwing everything, that you have worked those things out. We can't wait for the Browns. It's not about a Super Bowl. It's about getting into the playoffs, playing in very important games and them being able to show up. Third and long, everyone knows where's the kid with the blonde hair, and they're able to connect on it. But this time you spend together beforehand, that is the time that you get paid off during the regular season, Nick.
It's 92 days till the regular season starts, which means right around 60 days till the start of training camp. In these next 60 days, to Chris's point, Odell and Baker, I expect them to do, and they need to do what we have seen the most productive quarterback wide receiver combos do in years past. Julian and Tom hang out together. They practice together. So one of the reasons Aaron Rodgers was upset when Jordy Nelson was released was that was one of his offseason guys. Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins, that's what they're doing. You mentioned Julio and Matt. We have a bunch of really, really elite level combos. Odell's never had that luxury, to where he's always been the elite end of a semi-elite combo because of the limitations of the quarterback. But now he also has to get up to speed learning Baker's mechanics, learning the tendencies of Baker that are different from Eli Manning.
And to be an elite receiver, it's very important, the mental aspect. OBJ must understand this is a talented team. I'm not going to have 150 yards every game. Every third down, they're not going to throw to me. So the thing that I'm going to watch, I believe they'll work out the football part, but it's time to step up from a mature standpoint. Be a leader. Be able to celebrate other people having success, because this offense, there's so many players, you have to be unselfish. And it starts with the kid with the blonde hair.
Let's see how he does. Back to the NBA Finals. Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors hoping to take a 2-1 lead tonight over the Warriors in Game 3. And despite reports that Kawhi is dealing with a knee injury, he said there are no excuses when he's on the floor. Nick, what do you think the Raptors need from Kawhi tonight?
Well, he's going to have to be more efficient from the floor, but where you can really see that he is laboring to a degree is not just his jump shot, as we discussed a lot yesterday, but his lack of activity helps side defense.
Yeah, he's a half tick late.
It is not the Kawhi Leonard of the previous round where he was just thoroughly dominant defensively, and his matchup's so much easier this round because he's not guarding Giannis. They're putting him on a weaker offensive player so he can help, but in order to be effective help side defense, you've got to be able to have your full mobility. So you would hope to see him be a little bit better there, because I would imagine he's going to be more productive tonight than he will in Game 4, because it's only the one day off between Game 3 and Game 4. But they need him to be efficient offensively.
And
tonight,
we need him to start in the first quarter the way he goes in the third quarter. Give this offense a boost early in the game. I believe he's going to get some good matchups in this game. Iggy, how healthy is he with Clay being limited or out of this game? Look for Kawhi to have his best game of the series in Game number 3.
All right, on the other side, there was hope that Kevin Durant could play Game 3. That hope has been dashed. Despite wanting to play and ramping up his workouts, KD's out. See, at this rate, when do you expect Kevin Durant to play?
Oh, this is hard, because I wasn't expecting him to play at all in the whole series. So for him playing any basketball in this series, wouldn't be surprised at all. Game number 5, that's when we see KD. I know he wants to play in Oracle, because game number four is going to be pivotal. But I believe realistically, game number five in Toronto is the first appearance by KD at the earliest.
I think you can all but cross him out for game four. Game five, to me, is the most optimistic one can be. And if he's not there by game five, then your original prediction from the day after he suffered this injury, which is we're not going to see Kevin Durant in a Warriors uniform again, mm-hmm. at the very least this season, maybe not ever, that might prove to be true. The Warriors keep slow bleeding this. Like, we'll update in a couple days, I remember when they said maybe he'd be available for game three of the Western Conference Finals. That was a couple weeks ago.
I hope I'm wrong about this one.
All right, back to the finals with KD out for game three and Klay Thompson still questionable for game three. All eyes will turn to Steph Curry in game three. He's had an up and down first two games of the series. Having to be the one consistent presence on the team isn't new for Curry, nor is it something that phases him.
Nothing changes. Stay consistent with my approach every year. Whether it's in training camp or in the finals and everything in between, just trying to boost confidence, create the right perspective going into each game, and we do it by committee. There's a lot of different, you know, voices that we have that we rely on. We all just understand the moment, and we're very locked in and focused on adapting, you know, to the circumstances that are thrown at us right now with, you know, a lot of injuries and kind of uncertainty of, you know, even who's going to be able to play. So we've been through a lot, had a lot of different experiences. This is just, you know, adding to that book. So we got to be ready.
Okay, CC, no KD, probably no Klay. And if he is in there, it's going to be very limited. How much pressure is on Steph Curry?
There's a lot of pressure. Jenna, you got pressure on him. He needs to cut his hair like he had a couple other. Last year's final, he had a shorter haircut. Jenna's like, what's wrong with Steph? His hair is growing and everything. I like it a little trimmed down. It makes it more aerodynamic with his face and everything.
Yeah, that was Jenna's commentary, the entire soundbite. But on the game, please.
This is the thing with Steph. Things do change, though. They got less firepower. He can't afford to be patient. When he starts off the game, typically point guards say, you know what, it's a big game, I'm going to be aggressive. That means attacking the basket or getting people shots. Man, Klay's got to be, I mean, Steph's got to be able to fill it up. Without Klay, they're dependent on him to be able to score. He can't afford to have an off night.
He can't afford to have an off quarter.
So for me, watch how many shots that he forces. He will take more bad shots because he's got to.
Yep.
So I have to be willing to accept that. I doubt. I'd be shocked if he shot above 50% from the field. He might have to shoot from deeper range. He might have to shoot earlier in the shot clock compared to letting them set up a box and one or them concentrating on him. So for me, there's more pressure because he can't be patient. He can't let the game. The greatest players always say in their biggest game, well, what's your plan? I'm going to let the game come to me.
No.
Oh, no, not tonight. He can't afford that. This is a special situation, but it's also a situation that superstars, they can thrive in, because if they win this game, everyone's going to know it's Steph Curry. And very seldom are you ever able, you can be as unselfish as you want to, but tonight we need him to be selfish. We need to be able to see his greatness. It's hard not to try to take over the game when you have all these other guys that you've been playing with for years and they're out of the lineup. And there's no way that Steph can have trust in all those backup players that he has not played in these big games with in this playoff run they've been on the last 5 years. Nick?
There's two game tapes that Steph should watch leading up to this game. Probably won't, but I think he should. One, neither have to do with Golden State Warriors this season. One is the 2015 NBA Finals that we touched on briefly yesterday. And watch what LeBron had to do in that series, where coming off of finals where he shot 58%, he shot 39%, but averaged 36 a game. You know why? There was no Love, no Kyrie, and it was, man, every bad shot for me is a better shot other than anything but a layup or a dunk for my teammates. Mm-hmm. I have to take 30 plus shots every game.
That's the number.
Because it's the only way my team can get any type of offense going. Now, that Cavs team also slowed the pace way down. They played kind of caveman basketball in 2015. I don't know if the Warriors can do that, but Steph needs to have a mentality that he has not had to have at almost any point in his career since he's been a superstar, which is, it's me against the world. It isn't good shot, great shot. It's going to be mediocre shot, bad shot, my shot. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first game film. And the other thing he should look at is, when he was at Davidson, you know how teams defended Davidson, particularly the year after he went on that incredible tournament run? With a box and one. Because he was the devastating force on the team and the only one they had to be worried about. And you know what? You can solve a box and one. The Raptors would be crazy if Clay's out to not at least see if the Warriors have adjusted from the box and one. Because it wasn't that Steph just didn't score in the fourth quarter once they went to the box and one, or didn't score at all in the fourth quarter. He didn't attempt a shot. He was too, in my mind, focused on the Warriors' ethos of, if I'm not open, someone else is. But that is not the case when KD's gone, when Klay's gone, when you don't have that firepower. So those two things, he can draw on those experiences.
If we know this, the Raptors know this, isn't there a whole game plan just going to be, hey, it's easy, just stop Steph? I mean, how does he deal with that, and what's the plan B for the Warriors?
You don't win three championships just with one player.
There's only going to be really one offensive player out there.
Okay, Jenna, I accept that. But Quinn Cook is a knockdown shooter. We saw him hit three big threes in game number two to be able to save them, especially those shots. That shot at 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, they needed that bucket. The one Steph ran onto the court, mm-hmm. thought there was going to be a timeout. These are professional athletes. And any time you come into a game and you don't respect them, that's the time you can look for them to thrive against you. So, no, Toronto is not going to take these other guys for granted. Iggy, a finals MVP, Draymond, a wrecking ball machine.
And offensively, Boogie in particular.
Yeah, and Boogie Cousins, an all-star who is very – he's one of the most skilled big men in the league. Bogut, one of the best pickers that we have in the league. Man, he's got three alley-oops from 0 feet in the last game. So there are other things. You don't get to the finals. I know people say, oh, man, they're a luxury, Kevin Durant and all that. But those other players, let's give them some credit.
But the other point, just to your point, Jenna, will the Raptors' entire game plan be to stop Steph? Of course. And you know what? We talk about Steph as if they win this championship, one of the 20 greatest players of all time. What was the Utah Jazz game plan against those Bulls teams when they were going for championships? Stop Jordan. And in game 6 in 98, he still dropped 45 on him in a game where his team didn't even score 90. Like, the greatest players in these spots, especially when they're undermanned, know the entire opposition is going to be about stopping me.
Right.
And I've got to find a way to overcome it. Now, it's an enormous ask, and I don't know if it's a fair ask, but that is the life of an NBA superstar.
It's fair.
Okay. All right, let's move on and talk some Anthony Davis now as we continue to guess where the Pelicans' big man will be playing next season. It seems more and more likely it won't be in New Orleans. After trying to keep the brow in the bayou, David Griffin has reportedly begun listening to offers for AD with the Celtics, the Knicks, and the Lakers as front runners. As for those Lakers, Bill Plachke of the LA Times is reporting that if the Lakers whiff in free agency, LeBron James may force his way out of Los Angeles. Nick, is a LeBron-Anthony Davis pairing the best option for both parties at this point?
Just very quickly before we get to that, Bill Plaschke's wrong. With respect to Bill Plachke, who I like, but LeBron's not going to force his way out of L.A. LeBron has no plans, no matter what happens this offseason, to demand a trade, to try to leave. And people can argue he should. It'd be better, but whatever it is, that is not on the table. Now, to answer your question, I think it is the best of both worlds for both players. I think it would give Anthony Davis an opportunity he's never had in his career, which is to play on center stage NBA to remind everyone, hey, before this year, you guys realize last year I was top three MVP candidate. The last two seasons, the injury issues went away. I played 75 games again prior to this year, averaging 28-11, near defensive player of the year level defense. We haven't seen Anthony Davis we've seen him in 13 playoff games in his career. Like, we haven't seen him on center stage. And for LeBron, it would give him a player who, a big man at this level, who he's never played with respect to early Chris Bosh, and a guy who he can turn the car keys over to repeatedly, because Anthony Davis has been the man on every team he's ever been on. So it is, to me, for the Lakers and for Anthony Davis, a perfect pairing. That doesn't mean David Griffin cares about that or has to acquiesce to those requests. But yeah, it's a perfect basketball fit, and it's a perfect fit for what both individual players want and need.
Well, I think we should go back, because if David Griffin is looking at trade offers, that means his conversation with Anthony Davis when they met, it didn't go well.
Nope.
Because he was trying to convince him. I think that that's an important part to this. So Anthony Davis already told David Griffin, I don't want to be there. So he also told him this. If he's consistent, I want to be in L.A. or in New York. So Nick has said that he thinks the AD-LeBron pairing is perfect. I don't know what is next to perfect, but him going to the Knicks, all right? If they don't trade him to the West, or they do have some little animosity to the Lakers, or they feel like the offer from the Knicks is better, I can argue him and KD is a better match moving forward because of youth and because of their personalities and because of New York Knicks basketball in New York City might be bigger than him playing with the Lakers with LeBron James.
Oh, listen, everything that I just said that would be up would available to Anthony Davis in Los Angeles, being on center stage, playing in big-time playoff games, showing the world how great he is, if and when the Knicks sign Kevin Durant, that is a carbon copy in New York. It's just New York City versus L.A. beaches. Like, it is, I totally agree with that. There is, I believe the Knicks are going to sign Kevin Durant. You believe the Knicks are going to sign Kevin Durant. When that happens, there is very little the Lakers can offer Anthony Davis that the Knicks cannot offer the exact same thing.
So tell me what that is. What are the two offers? Who could the Pelicans get more from, the Lakers or the
Knicks?
Oh,
so you're talking about what the trade offers.
Because at this point, David Griffin's going to say, all right, I want to get the most
Hypothetically.
How much do you value the third pick of the draft versus the fourth pick?
Yep.
The Lakers' young players, even if you're Ingram's got blood clots. Lonzo can't shoot. Has Kuzma already reached a ceiling? Take your most pessimistic view of all of the Lakers' young players. They are still markedly better than what the Knicks' young players have to offer. The players that the Lakers can offer is better. But if you think that the kid from Duke, who was Zion's best friend, if he at number three is going to be the best R.J. Barrett, the best possible option to trump those things, then the Knicks have the better offer. If you think that the fourth pick, Darius Garland, whoever that's going to be, is close enough to R.J. Barrett, then the Lakers have the better offer.
Those two picks.
I mean, to me,
it comes down to a little bit of that, but I'm just going to go to the age between LeBron James and Kevin Durant. If we just say all those other things are equal, the pick, third, fourth, the other players, they're never equal. The Lakers probably have a little bit of edge to that. But playing with a younger Kevin Durant, if he's coming off a three-peat, coming to New York City, to me, that's more exciting than playing with an aging LeBron James, who's coming off a season where he missed a significant part of the season and
suffered a terrible organization, too.
Suffered his first and the lack of control within that organization. I could easily see AD ending up in New York, and I could make the case that it's a better fit for his career.
I think it's Knicks or Lakers. The Celtics, I know they're being included. The Celtics are going to lose Kyrie, and they're not going to be in the game for this.
And Anthony Davis has not said that he would sign an extension.
Exactly.
All right. Back here, first things first, joined by NBA and NCAA champ Antoine Walker. Antoine, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Jenna, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I like that. Hello. It was just plain and it was just, let's get right to it. Antoine, we're talking Kyrie Irving this morning.
No. It's unbelievable. Go ahead, Jenna,
it was smooth. I like the way he did it. Early on, Kyrie seemed destined to pair up with Kevin Durant here in New York with the Knicks, but reports now are that he's given every indication that it's a different New York team he wants to play with, and that's the Brooklyn Nets. Brooklyn's young roster had a resurgence this past season, finishing sixth in the East with 42 wins. Antoine, what do you think about possible destinations for Kyrie? Knicks, Nets, neither, both?
Well, I have a lot of comments about this this situation.
Okay.
But the first one is, I think for Brooklyn, it's a no-brainer. I mean, you get a chance to get a top 10 player, top 5 point guard in the league, you take full advantage of that, and you sign a Kyrie Irving, knowing that it's a possibility that he has leadership
deficiencies.
You know, I mean, you got to think about that. He's had the problems in Boston. I don't think that's something that you can overlook, being that you have a young core. Obviously, you're basically saying that you're going to bail on D'Angelo Russell. I don't think those two guys fit together, with him and Russell being two-point guards. I don't think they'll be able to play together. I think the other thing you look at, if I'm Kyrie Irving, is I want to go back home. Basically putting myself, if I'm not able to land another big-time free agent with me, we're going into almost a rebuilding situation or a 500-type team again that you just came off of, a 41-42 win team. And the other big question I got about this, I want to just know what direction Kyrie's thinking as a player. I mean, obviously you don't want to be in Boston, and you have good core in Boston. You guys have done really well together. Last year, you obviously didn't get to where you wanted to be as a team, but the pieces are in play where you can actually really make a legitimate run and maybe sign one other guy to come off the bench, because you're going to probably lose Terry Rozier.
Yes.
But obviously he wants to lead there. So now you got to switch it over to, okay, I want to go to New York. New York is probably not the place for him. That's why I think Brooklyn's probably the place for him. The media is a little bit softer in Brooklyn than it's going to be on the New York Knicks.
Yes,
the pressure is going to be a little bit more different in Brooklyn than it will be with the Knicks. So I think that's what he's looking at, more so than the best situation for him to play basketball. Because we all know the best situation is to go to L.A. and play with LeBron James, basketball-wise. But obviously, I don't think he wants that anymore.
Well, to me, it's so fascinating that the Nets are the leading contender now. Because we just talked about Anthony Davis in the trade. The reason I said Boston is not getting into the game is because Kyrie's leaving. If Kyrie were to say, I'm staying, then guess what? They offer Tatum and they get Anthony Davis. So Kyrie, to me, has these four options. Stay in Boston and play with Anthony Davis. Go to the Knicks and play with Kevin Durant. Go to the Lakers and play with LeBron. Or go to Brooklyn and have a version of what you just had in Boston that did not work out, with, I would say, a worse core of young players. Now, Boston, none of their young players are the level D'Angelo Russell is, but you think he might be, might leave. They certainly would have to pay him this summer. But it is so fascinating to me that Kyrie might seemingly, I don't want to say make the same mistake, but make the same decision a second time. This one, he didn't pick to go to Boston. He just embraced it when he got there, at least temporarily. But it does go in line with what I've been hearing, which is that his dad, Dredrick, was one of the driving factors to him demanding out of Cleveland. That didn't like that he had real issues with the way LeBron and his group ran things there, essentially, in his mind, and wanted to go somewhere else. And it would seem like his dad is the one that is really dead set on him being on the East Coast, whether it be New York or Brooklyn. I don't know how Kyrie feels about it, but it is fascinating to me that you would have an option to play with what, the best, the second best, and the fifth best player in the world, however you want to slot LeBron, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, and you might choose door number four, which is to play with a promising young team in Brooklyn when you just had a promising young team in Boston and couldn't make it work.
Well, let's go like this. Boston, he made the decision, I don't want to play there. Don't want to spend the rest of my career in Boston. That's just a lot of pros have made that decision.
Sure.
So you've played there. He's been there, and it's fairly obvious that he's worn out his welcome there. New York, I'm just going to just slow you down a little bit. I don't believe it's Kyrie's choice with the Knicks, because I've talked to the Knicks, and the Knicks got some concerns about Kyrie. Like, they've done their independent study. They've got some concerns, and they've got some concerns. Does he want to be in New York, or does he want to be in Brooklyn? They know about his dad's influence, and they know the potential of him playing with LeBron. I don't think he's LeBron's first choice. If LeBron could pick all the free agents, I don't think he's picking Kyrie. So now we're at door number four in Brooklyn, and you guys might be a little bit different than me. Nick, I've spent some time with you and your dad. Your dad's had a tremendous influence. I didn't grow up with a dad, so I don't know what a dad and a dad's influence can do to you, but I do know that late in my career, one of the most influential men I had in my life was my grandfather, the guy I was named after. His favorite team was the Cleveland Browns. And I took an interview with Dwight Clark and the Cleveland Browns just so potentially at the end of my career I could play 1 year with my grandpa's favorite team in the state of Ohio. So I could just imagine If I grew up with a dad who groomed me, playing basketball as a former player, taking me to camp, seeing my talent develop, and that's my team, and now they're sexier. They moved from New Jersey to Brooklyn. They got a lot of good things going on in Brooklyn. I could see that getting me either confused or altering what I thought was best for me, Antoine.
I have no problem with that, and I understand that. My problem, if I'm looking at this, if I'm Kyrie Irving, or if I'm the GM of a team, and I'm trying to pick this. Now, does Kyrie just want to be a part of a team and be happy? And that's nothing wrong with that. It's that, you know, a player, you have that right to just be happy. I'm kind of old school. And when I went to the Celtics, I knew it was a rebuild. And they drafted me 6 in 96. It was rebuilding. My whole goal as a player, like, can I get us back to the playoffs? It wasn't about winning the championship. Can we just get back to being a relevant playoff team? I never had the pieces around me to win an NBA title, but we had a good enough team to be competitive and to make the playoffs. Kyrie has to decide what he wants to be as a player. He is already an NBA champion. He's probably going to be a first-team ballot Hall of Famer, a terrific individual talent. But when is he going to want to join a team and win multiple championships? If that's not what he wants to do, Brooklyn has to think about that. Because they're a playoff team already without signing him. You could bring Russell back and be a playoff team again. So I think that's where he's putting himself in a situation. At this point in his career, you're already leaving money on the table because you're not staying in Boston. You don't want to go win? That's a big question mark to me when you don't want to put yourself in the best situation. And the best situation is to go call LeBron and say, I want to come back and let's try to do this again. And he don't want to do that. And that's what bothers me about Kyrie Irving's whole situation, that he doesn't seem like he wants to win because he's in a pretty good situation in Boston, and he's leaving that. And now you want to go start over again and rebuild in Brooklyn. They have to rebuild. It's no guarantee he's going to get another star to go with him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I just that's the question mark that I got with Kyrie Irving.
All right, we're talking Game 3 of the NBA Finals.
We'll explain that one later.
Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors will hope to take a 2-1 lead tonight. Reports of Kawhi dealing with a knee injury have surfaced recently, especially since his shooting is shade above 38%. But Kawhi was quick to dismiss the noise, saying there are no excuses.
100%. I'm on the floor. There's no excuses. Everybody knows everyone's banged or bruised up at this moment. Pretty much you heard it before. Coming this season wasn't, feeling healthy. Still was, trying to get back to my old self. They seen that, they felt that, seen pictures of my body, and we pretty much just laid out the schedule and went from there. Just pretty much, like I said, laid out a schedule. Win game by game, see the things get worse or get better, and then just try to keep attacking each day.
All right, Antoine, what's it going to be like for Kawhi now? What's he going to have to do to get the win over the Warriors?
He's going to have to be aggressive, I think, early in this game. I think tonight he has to come out with an aggressive mindset because Golden State, you want to withstand their runs. You figure they're going to come out the first 6 minutes with a lot of energy, a lot of pace. Kawhi is the one guy that can calm that down. I think he has to be aggressive. But then get back to doing what he's done in this series, is being a willing passer and make sure his guys get involved. But I think the superstars, and Michael was great at this, LeBron, Kobe, at picking their spots and when they need to be aggressive. I think that's what Kawhi is going to have to do consistently throughout this game, is pick his spots and not let his team get down, regardless of who's on the floor. I think you got to understand Golden State's a great home team. They feed off that energy, kind of the same energy Toronto fed off of, obviously playing at home too. But he has to be picking spots and be aggressive, get to the free throw line, change his game up a little bit, mix it up, work from 15 feet in, try to get to the basket a little bit more, make his mid-range game where he doesn't have to, where he can avoid the double team before it comes over. If he adds those little things to his game and stay aggressive offensively and pick his spots, he'll be fine.
And Kawhi's going to get a different look in this game, at least to a degree, than he got in Game 2. In Game 2, the Warriors made Klay Thompson the primary defender on him. Now, Klay's either not going to play, in which case you don't have to worry about it, or if he's limited, there is no chance. They say, hey, Klay, in addition to we need you on offense with a bad hamstring, guard Kawhi Leonard. They will put Klay Thompson on Danny Green, and they will ask someone else to guard Kawhi Leonard, which could Klay gave him some trouble in Game number 2. I would think Draymond or Iggy would be the tougher matchup because they're a little longer. They're certainly a little stronger than Klay. But the other thing that happened in Game 2 was the Raptors weren't running ISOs for Kawhi Leonard. Zach Lowe pointed this out. He only had 7 ISOs in game 2. That's the second fewest of the entire postseason. Mm-hmm. What you've said they need to get to, the post-ups. They only ran 4 post-ups for him in game number 2. And so for Kawhi Leonard, if Clay is out, this is going to be about, you mentioned LeBron or Michael or Kobe, controlling the game. The game, sometimes you have a bunch of points, but it feels like they were almost a hollow point total. I know that can sound unfair at times, but when Kawhi had 34 points, it was like he did, but did you feel the real impact of it? Controlling the game, because the Raptors should be in very strong position, even though they're on the road and the Warriors have never lost a home playoff game in the finals since Kevin Durant's been on the team. But I think a lot of the ways you're going to utilize Kawhi Leonard have to be a little differently than in game 2, particularly down the stretch of game 2 where he was 1 of 6 mm-hmm. in the fourth quarter.
I have to slightly disagree with you as far as the isolation. I think that's for a reason. I think that's the worst offense for Toronto going against Golden State with the type of length they have. Because if you ISO, you are inviting the double team. Mm-hmm. When you know he's going to get double teamed. Oh, when you ISO, when you try to take a guy off the bounce, they're playing up on his three-point shot. That's made him less effective from the three-point line. So for me, I think you should go into the low post. I think they should flip it where they had 7 low posts, 4 ISOs. I believe that would be a better balance going into game number 3, how that they defended him. But I believe the number one thing for Kawhi is that you got to be on the attack. If he's able to, in the first 2 games, he shot 26 free throws. If he's able to get, averaging 13, if he's able to get to that 13 number, that means Draymond and Iggy, someone's in foul trouble.
Yep.
And I need to be able to get them in foul trouble early. There is no, I don't care all these simulators. Nick's trying to tell me at the analytics and they play these games and this happens. I'm like, man, I'm used to the old school, man. I got that guy. He's not going to score. But if I get Draymond or Iggy into foul trouble early, I don't see a way for them to be able to win the game. Because then they can't be aggressive on the defensive end, which also means don't forget about those 14 to 20 points you need from Iggy and Draymond. So I'm on the attack if I'm Kawhi. I'm getting either one of those guys into foul trouble. And if he's able to do that, Twan, I believe the Raptors are able to get the game tonight.
I know we're asking a lot from Kawhi on the offensive end, but also I think he has to get back to being a little bit more aggressive defensively. And what I mean by that is that because if you're going to play this boxing one, these junk defenses and trap, Kawhi can't lay in the corner because you got a non-shooter. He's going to have to get in the middle, mix it up, be able to rotate, challenge at the basket. Mm-hmm. And he did it. We saw him do it against, obviously, the Milwaukee series, take on a challenge and guard Giannis and everything. He has to get back to being active defensively, too. And I know it's tough, but this comes with the territory. This is the reason why we believe he's the best two-way player in the league, is because of his ability to do this. So he has to get back aggressive defensively as well.
And the injuries' impact on his defense, I think, has been underrated.
That's a
We've
great
talked
point.
About how the injuries hurt his three-point shooting, his efficiency. He was fully spent with those 6 games against Milwaukee, particularly the last 4, and he was as good as an NBA player can be on both ends of the court, games 3 through 6. In this series, he has had an easier defensive matchup, and he hasn't been able to take advantage of it as much. He's been a step slow in some rotations. That free safety position that they've kind of had him playing, mm-hmm. where he can be dominant, he hasn't been as dominant. I think that is where we don't think about the injury playing a factor, but it does. That's where they absolutely need
If I'm betting with Nick Wright's money, if Kawhi Leonard's healthy, when they throw that ball to Sean Livingston, the claw is going the other way.
Yeah, and on the Iggy shot.
They win that. He steals that last pass if he's healthy.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.